Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, this morning, I have with me in the studio Tahiba Bain. She's with Women Against Mass Incarceration. And, you know, she's going to be talking about her life and her experiences with the correctional system. And there's going to be an event, actually, Beulah Heights on February 11th from 12 to 3 p.m. is the panel discussion. She's going to be a part of that. How you doing this morning?
Hello, how are you?
Very good, very good. So now you grew up in the Bronx, right?
No, I actually grew up in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, that's right. You know, we homies, man. Brooklyn in the house, man. So tell me about growing up in Brooklyn. I could tell you about growing up in Brooklyn. We're going to talk about you.
Well, growing up in Brooklyn was a bittersweet experience. Brooklyn teaches you how to survive. And actually, you learn different things. You learn different cultures, and you experience different situations while growing up in Brooklyn. It wasn't so rough because, you know, I'm a woman. I'm a female. So, you know, you guys had it rougher than we did. But it's still, we had to defend ourselves. We had to teach you. You were taught survival skills early on from grade school even. So, yeah, you know, it was a shaping experience.
Now, were you born in Brooklyn?
Born and raised in Brooklyn.
Okay, all right. How about your family? Your family originally from Brooklyn also?
My immediate family is from Brooklyn, but we were originally from Milledgeville, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
My grandmother migrated up to the north because she said she wasn't going to work for no little red penny. So she came up there and, you know, she started her family and here I am, New York bred.
Right, right. So tell me about, what high school did you go to?
I went to William H. Maxwell High School.
Okay.
I went to PS 138 grade school and right. I went to IS 210 junior high school.
Okay.
My high school was a little, it's a story behind me going to Maxwell. Can I tell you?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, great. I was an exceptional student in school. And I got skipped from the 7th grade to the 9th grade, but my grandmother didn't think I was good enough, so she had them put me back into the 8th grade.
Mm.
So when I took the test for Brooklyn Tech, you know what Brooklyn Tech
Absolutely.
Is? Okay, it was a prestigious high school at the time.
Yes.
And only the select few get in enrolled. So I took the test and I passed the test. However, I didn't think I could make it. So I was so fearful that I said, I'm not going to go. So I wind up going to the school my sister went to, which was William H. Maxwell.
Right.
Which was a completely wrong school for me.
It was. Why was it wrong?
Because it was a vocational school. I'm more of a technical person.
Okay.
And, you know, growing up, you don't know who you are. You just know what you know. And you know the familiarity of a person, of coming up behind my older sister, I didn't want to leave her, and I didn't think that I was going to make it by myself in Brooklyn Tech because, you know, my grandmother had it in my mind that you're not good enough. You know, she put me back in 8th grade, so it was shaping, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but today I'm over it, but it's just something that I had to remember within these last few months of my life to make me understand, like, how did I do certain things that I've done and to get where I've gone and to get where I'm at today.
Right, right. So tell me about high school. What did you like to do? What, you had any hobbies or you just went to school and partied or what? What was it?
Well, I did a little bit of everything.
Yeah, all right.
I went to school. I was a straight-A student. Like I said, I excelled in my early years. So in my first few years of high school, they weren't teaching me anything in the regular courses like science, math, social studies, and they weren't English. I was excelled. I was beyond where they were at.
Mm-hmm.
So I skipped those classes. That led to the partying and cutting school.
Oh.
However, I did like bookkeeping and stenography, shorthand, because that was something new. That's something I haven't learned before.
Right.
As well as, you know, home ec, you know, gym and everything. So I went to those classes. I went to the classes that I enjoyed, and the other classes I just skip.
Right. This is Juan Castillo. You're listening to the Electric Drum. I'm speaking to Tahiba Bain. She's with Women Against Mass Incarceration. She was born in Brooklyn and also grew up in Brooklyn. She lives in Bridgeport now. She's going to be at an event at Beulah Heights here in the city. It's going to be a panel discussion on February 11th from 12 to 3 where, you know, people are going to be coming there talking about their experiences of being incarcerated, as well as some of the children, you know, who you know, we forget about sometimes that are how they're affected by it. So it was time when you graduated from high school. So what do you do?
Well, actually, I didn't graduate from high school.
You didn't graduate?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Me skipping school.
Okay.
Affected my graduation status.
All right.
So anybody that's listening, if you think that, you know, your attendance doesn't play a part, it does. Well, I didn't graduate, but I did get my GED, but after that, I was already on the road to destruction.
Talk about that.
Okay, well, on the road to destruction, man, I started using drugs, started hanging out. When you cut school, you have idle time, and you find some ways to fill those time slots. And I filled all my time slots with hanging out, playing hooky, and using drugs.
Getting high.
Yeah, getting high. Started with drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, and it eventually led up to, over the years and throughout, a progression of smoking crack, sniffing cocaine and smoking crack, which in turn led me to be incarcerated numerous times and, you know, living a double life. But in the process of that, I was still in school, learning. Like, I wasn't in school, but I was learning. Like, I would read the dictionary from cover to cover to figure out new words, to find out new things. I was always picking up books. I was just always trying to find something new, because I was a child that always needed to feel like she was doing something and being a part of something, because I never felt like I fit in anywhere.
Right, so you went to prison two or three times. You said three times.
Yeah, I went to prison about four.
Four times. Yeah. All right. So, talk about you know, when it finally. Well, first of all, let's talk about the experience in jail. Right. Mm-hmm. Talk about your experiences there, and what was that like?
Well, when you first go to prison, you don't know what to expect, and you know you have your guard up, but then. Life sometimes makes it easy. You have people you can fall back on, whether it's your family or other people that was in the street with you that actually sometimes held you down, because not all the times do they actually stand by you and support you. So the first couple of times, it wasn't long stint, so it didn't really have an impact on me. I felt like, oh, I could get away with this. I could do this again, and it's a slap on my wrist, a slap on my hand. Oh, that's nothing. That was like 6 months. That's nothing. I could do that sleeping.
Right.
And that's what happens when you go through that, and you don't feel like, you don't fear for your life, because you only have a few months. So you do that sleeping, you mind your business, you know people that you haven't seen on the street, you wonder where they are, they're in prison.
Right.
So when you get there, oh, what's up? How you doing? That's my girl. Whatever.
Right.
So it's like a reunion. So with that happening often, it didn't like settle into my spirit that something was wrong, because it wasn't like I was getting punished for it.
I see.
Yeah, so I kept doing things that made me feel good, that filled the void of being rejected and not feeling wanted, not being able to fit in as a child growing up. So I was like, okay, fine. If you can't beat them, join them, right?
Mm.
So that's what my mentality was. And I felt like I was 10 feet tall and invincible, and you can do me no harm.
Right.
And that's a bad mental state to be in, because it's erroneous thinking, and your cognition is not where it's supposed to be. And drugs compounded on that just makes it worse.
Right. Now, you know, you had a child while you were locked up too. You have a son, right?
I have two children.
You have two. Yeah, right. Were they around when you were going to prison?
Not in the beginning. No. I had my first son when I was 25 years old.
Right.
And I had my second son when I was 30. By the age of 22, 23, I was ready to settle down. When I started going to prison, I was early on, like 17, 18, 21.
I see.
When I did go to prison, after I had both of my children, but at this time, I was like, it's like everything that you've done is now coming up to catch, to get you. And I started changing my life when I had my son. However, I was still using drugs.
Okay.
I was in school. I was studying paralegal and business at Three Rivers Community College in Connecticut. I was living in Norwich in a shelter. So I had changed my life. I had gotten married. My husband was selling drugs, and he had gotten arrested. So that hence me and being in a shelter. So in that time, I was like, you know what? I can't live this life anymore. So when I started to change my life, my son was like maybe 3 years old, my first son.
Right.
I said, no more. My husband was in jail. I'm just going to change. So I started going to school. I was living in a shelter. I was doing what I had to do. But when you're still doing one thing wrong, it can mess up your entire path on what you're on.
Which is getting high.
Which is getting high, using drugs. And even though I lived a double life, and eventually it caught up to me, and I went to jail for robbing a store, a Greyhound. I didn't rob it myself, but I was conspiracy.
Yeah, you were involved with it.
I was involved, yeah.
Right.
And I went to jail for that. I have fled Connecticut and went to Florida. And when I came, they extradited me from Florida to Connecticut.
Right.
To face whatever I had to face. And they found me not guilty because I really didn't rob the bank.
Wow.
But I still had to spend a little time away from my family. And then when I came back, I went again because I had a warrant for that same charge. And I had to sit in there for like another 6 months to 8 months until that got cleared up.
Right.
After that, I was like, I'm done, until maybe 15 years ago. And then I got arrested for something I did do. And that was, I've spent 10 years in a federal prison for that.
You spent 10 years?
Mm-hmm. 10 years in a federal prison.
Different scenario now. It's not just a skid bed. You're just doing 3 months or whatever. So now 10 years gives you some time to think about what's going on.
Exactly.
Did you try to get any drug treatment while you were locked up?
Well, yeah, but I wasn't eligible because I had a violent crime. When you're in prison, when you go to the federal prison, you have criteria for the drug program.
Yes.
And violent crime, when you have a violent crime, that does not make you eligible. You become ineligible. So you can do, and yeah, it's crazy. I know, look at me like,
yeah, it is crazy.
Yeah, but it's true. I wasn't able to go in-house and get time and get service for drug treatment in a program, but I was able to do it like outside during classes and stuff like that.
So like you had your AA, NA, and so, AA types programs.
Like that, yeah.
Right, right. So you did start dealing with your drug addiction while you were locked up.
Oh, definitely. I started dealing with my drug addiction many years before I got locked up. I just didn't know how to let go because I was so stuck in it that I didn't want to get high anymore. I didn't want to do this anymore.
Right.
But when you have an addiction, it keeps calling you.
Yeah, it's a psychological thing.
Exactly. And you think, oh, because I used to smoke weed with crack mixed.
Right.
So that was my drug of choice. So when I said, oh, one blunt, and we used to roll in the blunt. One blunt is not going to harm me.
Right.
But that's a lie from the pit of hell.
Yes.
One blunt takes you back down the road 10 times worse than you were when you stopped on that road. And I didn't realize that. And every time I said 1-1-1, it ended up to be thousands, hundreds, I guess. So I always wanted to stop. So kind of for me, it was a blessing in disguise. I didn't want to leave my children.
For the 10 years.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Okay, let me back up, because I had already determined before I committed my crime that I was going to go away to a 6-month program.
Okay.
So I had said, this is me working my life out, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to go away to a 6-month program. When I come back, I should be better. I should be fine. I will get the help that I need. I can kick this. I know I can. This is not my life. I see me doing bigger and better things, greater things. And I don't want to do this anymore. However, God had a different plan. God said, you're on the right track, but it's not going to help you that way. So I'm not saying he put me in prison, but he allowed me to go to prison to get the real healing I need to come home and not even smoke a cigarette.
So let me ask you this question, okay? Folks always talk about, number one, you know, how mass incarceration is not a good thing. People that are committing, you know, people that are getting locked up, they're getting locked up for possession, you know, they're not really getting locked up for selling drugs, you know, and they're spending a lot of time, right? I mean, you speak at a lot of you know, panels, and, you know, you go all over the, you know, the tri-state area talking, right? What do you say? I mean, you know, I mean, are you against women being incarcerated for too long of periods of time, or what's your take on this whole thing?
I'm against women being incarcerated, period.
Okay, talk about that.
Because women being incarcerated, for me, it was different. Because I had to understand where my path was taking me.
Right.
But incarceration is not a good thing for anyone ever.
Of course.
Okay, so a woman being incarcerated, I say this, when a man goes away and becomes incarcerated, the woman becomes a modern day widow. When a woman goes away and becomes incarcerated, the children become modern day orphans. Where does that leave the child with it? My grandmother raised me. My mother was on drugs.
Right.
So we don't have grandmothers willing to do that. And trust me, my grandmother, she fought for it. She didn't want to raise me. She was getting ready to give me away for a cake because she already was raising two other children.
Right.
Today is not as, you know, people are not as compassionate. Grandmothers want their lives. We have women strung out on drugs. We need to change the narrative of this thing. Because women do not need to, we don't belong in prison.
So let me ask you this question. I mean, so do you feel, I mean, your situation, you know, you admit to the fact that you committed a crime, right?
Yes, I committed my crime.
And in fact, you know, you got 10 years. So are you saying that you shouldn't have been locked up?
No, I'm saying that I should have been locked up.
Yeah.
For the extensive amount of time, probably not.
Because that didn't help any.
No, you know, that helped me.
It helped you, but a regular person outside of you that gets 10 years for what you did, probably not, because then it becomes a revolving door. Well, is that what you're saying?
Well, everyone's journey is different. What I'm saying, of course, is this: it didn't take me 10 years to get it right.
Yes.
3 years, I was good. 5 years, I was better. After 5 years, it was like, okay, I'm ready to go. If something's not going to change, you start reversing the mental. Because after a certain amount of time, if you're not going to get it, you're not going to get it. Not everyone is on the same path. Not everyone is on the same journey.
Yeah.
There's also alternative to incarceration.
Okay.
Where women do not have to go to prison. Because when we leave our children, we leave our children to a state that doesn't... a carceral state that's a revolving door. And that says, my son just got arrested. Because he thought that I abandoned him and I went somewhere better for him, better than being with him. And when he got there, he realized, oh, wow, this is not what I thought it was. Because when he came to see me, he saw me with my Sunday's best on. I put on my face, you know, I put on my makeup, put on my best uniform, and I smiled and I laughed and I joked and I tickled them during the visit for however many hours.
So it was the wrong message that they were getting.
That he got, yeah, because he thought I was okay. He didn't see me go back to my bunk and cry. He didn't see me sit down and contemplate suicide because I didn't want to be there. He don't know these things until he himself went through that.
The system. So basically what you're saying is that, and your crime was, of course, still drug related, right? Because would you have committed that same crime if you weren't using drugs?
No. No
okay,
way.
All right.
I would have been in my right mind.
So this is we're talking about drug offenses, which is a big movement, you know, to look for the courts to look at, you know, these people that we're locking up, including women, more compassionately because they're on drugs. They're like, you know, and so you're saying that if there were more alternative programs, you know, maybe sometime, because, you know, like, society still wants you to pay for whatever you did wrong. I mean, especially if it's not possession, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, because even possession is kind of iffy. I mean, if you got a drug problem and you're not really hurting anybody, but then you get caught with the drug because it's illegal, now you go to jail for 5-10 years. And it was really all about the problem, because if you didn't have that problem, you wouldn't have them drugs on you, right?
I don't know. I mean, possession, 5-10 years for possession,
kind of crazy. Kind of crazy, right?
That's ludicrous.
Right. But if you assault somebody, you know, trying to get the drugs, right? Then you got to do some time.
I'm not saying they should do some time in that, because that's a psychological malfunction.
That's still connected to the drug use.
Yeah, that's okay. A psychological malfunction that's going on, because as well as being a mentally incapacitated person, because you don't have to have a drug addiction to psychologically snap and harm someone.
Now I'm playing that devil's advocate here. You know, because I'm an ex-offender myself, right?
Okay.
And I'm also an ex-addict, you know, so I've been there, all right? Okay. You know, by the way, this is Juan Castillo, of course, is Electric Drum, and we're speaking to Taiba Bain. She's with Women Against Mass Incarceration. She's been incarcerated, is going through the system, you know, ex-addict, you know, still working on you know, on her journey. You know, she's going to be at Beulah Heights on February 11th from 12 to 3, for a panel discussion there to talk about these issues. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, her incarceration right now. And we're also talking about, you know, in fact, you know, just the justice system and how it deals with women, number one, and with just addicts, period, right? And right now, it seems like we're just locking people up for their addiction, right? You know, and so what is Women Against Mass Incarceration trying to do?
Women Against Mass Incarceration is lifting as we climb.
Okay.
We're formerly incarcerated women that mentor women that's coming home from prison.
Okay.
We stay with them for a year to help navigate them back into the system, to give them support and encouragement that, you know what, after incarceration, there's life. We live in a carceral state, and this place called America lives and thrives off of the 2.3 million people in prison. We women are the fastest growing population being incarcerated in America.
Mm.
Yeah, by 800% from, I believe, 1980 or something like that.
And just to add, it's a money-making situation because there's a lot of private prisons in America. And so it's actually the prison industrial complex.
Exactly.
All right, go ahead.
The prison industrial complex encompasses every prison, every supervised release program, halfway house. It encompasses all of that. And they make money from the bracelets that they put on us when we come home and we have to be a home confinement. They make money from us when we come out of prison and we have to pay a restitution or we have to pay parole fees or something like that. Yet and still, they're asking us to be, they call us returning citizens. I have an issue with that term.
Mm-hmm.
Because a returning citizen, when you come in, a veteran is a returning citizen. They come from war and they come back into to America and they get all their rights back plus extra amenities. When a person is formally incarcerated, returned into society, we don't get our rights back handed to us and there's no extra amenities. We have to fight for everything we get. We have to crawl before we can walk and sometimes we have to slither because we're considered the lowest of the low, the belly of the beast, and there's no reformation. But I beg a differ because I surround myself with many men and many women that have proven the society of America wrong in that narrative. Because I sit with people, the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. We go from nation to nation speaking on panels. We have one at Yale. I mean, we had one at Yale University a few months ago. We have one coming up at New York University tomorrow, to be exact. I was supposed to be at a meeting tonight to talk about this, but tomorrow we have a symposium to where we have women, prisoners of political prisoners, clemency, people that came home from clemency by way of President Barack Obama, sitting on these panels talking about their ordeal. We have people that have parents and chilled parents that's still in prison that we're advocating and rallying and activate and being activists to come home. We are a conglomerate of a movement. We had a women's march on Saturday, which I made history and I was a part of, because women have a voice and it's time for our voices to be heard. Women Against Mass Incarceration, we're just a small part of a big movement and we're going to become bigger. We're the new freedom fighters is who we are.
Well, what was interesting is that as you say all of this, right?
Yes.
You know, it's really interesting how when, you know, supposedly when you get sentenced, right, it's like we're gonna lock you up for 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, whatever, because you need to pay for your mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then when you come out of jail, right, then not only the society as a whole, but families and jobs and your people, you know, people that hire and all of that, they want you to prove yourself.
Yes.
And what's interesting is that And it's in the process of you proving yourself by, number one, being turned down for a job that you really can do. And now you have to take a lesser job because of that, right? They're having you pay for what you did all over again.
Yes.
So in a sense, right, it's like, you know, you serving more than the 10 years. You also serving the other 5, 10 years after you come home that you're being discriminated against and that you're going through all kinds of changes trying to prove yourself that you are worthy. Now, that's deep.
Yes, it is.
And for folks that are going through that, it's worse than hell. And that's, and you are here to tell them that, right?
Yes, I am. I would like to say that when you're sentenced...
Yes.
You're sentenced to a civil death. That means that you're stripped from your rights. You're not a citizen. So... when you come home and you look to, because we feel we paid our dues to society. That's what incarceration is all about. Paying your dues for harm you have done, either to someone else or yourself. However, society does not see it that way. Because society said, yeah, you paid your dues, but you don't deserve another chance. Right. Not for the most, not for everyone. Not for everyone, because not everyone has that same erroneous thinking. However, majority, and we do have to prove ourselves every step of the way, every day. I have people that have come from prison, that come from homeless shelters and come from homelessness in NYU, get ready to go into a doctorate program. I have people that have been formerly incarcerated that are attorneys, went in as an attorney, came out as an attorney, that fight for us. I have people like myself that went in that was lost and was tired of living that life but knew it was something much better out there in the world for us. And we come home and we educate ourselves. I graduated with my associate's degree from Bronx Community College. I'm about to graduate from City College with my CUNY BA in May. I'm looking to go to law school in 2018. I'm not giving up, and I'm studying civil liberties law.
Good for you.
So, yeah, we have a multitude and a cesspool of many brilliant, brilliant, brilliant men and women. But society have to take off the blinders to see us. But if they don't take off the blinders to see us, the blinders will be removed. And the Women's March is the removing of the blinders for the women's movement of today.
Right. At what point in your life, right, what was that moment, right, that you said enough is enough and I gotta do better? Do you remember that day?
Well, as I said earlier, I had determined my own fate. I was going to go to a drug rehab program for 6 months. But when I went to prison in 2002,
yes,
I turned myself in May 12th, 2002. And as I was sitting in Nyanic Overflow in the gymnasium, I said, you know what, Lord? This is not it. And I got on my knees. Everybody, I looked around. We were laying on mats in the gym. And I looked around. The gym was full. And that's what I mean by overflow, because they didn't have enough beds to fit everyone that was in that prison at the time. So when I say, I'm sitting there, and I sat up, and I looked all around me, and it was like a sea full of women in that gymnasium. And I said, Lord, I can't do another stint. I don't know what's going to happen. But whatever happens, do not let me out of this prison or any prison that you send me in unless I'm a new person.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to come out the way I came in. And if I don't get it right, don't let me out. I meant that from the very depth of my soul. And I sat up on my knees and I kneeled down and I just started praying. I looked up and I said, I need a Bible. I didn't disturb like the entire gymnasium. And I was determined to find my Bible. I said, I need a Bible. And this one lady, I don't know who she is. She said, here's one. You can have it. It's yours if you want to keep it. I said, thank you. And God bless you. And I went back to my mat and I kneeled down and I prayed. And I, you know, you turn to Psalm 23 because that's the one you know. And I turned to Psalm 23 and I read that psalm and I said, that's it. That's it. And then he took me to James 1. Then he took me to Hebrews. And then he took me all throughout the Word of God. And for 10 years, God worked on my life. And that was May 22nd, 2002. When I decided I was not going to come back to that lifestyle.
Good for you. You know, I was part of that cesspool, right? You know, that they claim was a cesspool. You know, I ended up going back to work in the jail as a pre-release coordinator. And I became the first ex-offender to work as a parole officer. So I know what you're talking about, right? You know, and I think that it's important because I think people don't understand that, you know, number one, that, you know, all we want to do is just like we paid our so-called debt to society. We're out now and, you know, we don't need to pay anymore. Right. And that we want to be treated like everybody else.
Right.
Right. You know, and if anybody needs to prove anything to is we need to prove it to ourselves. It's not about everybody else. Right. You know what I mean? And but even most important, I'm glad you came because I think that, you know, sometimes this country forgets about the women that are in prison. Mm. You know, the women in prison are pretty much, you know, invisible. Because when you think of prison, you don't think of women. You know, and you've been through that, so you understand, you know. So before you leave, right? And I want to remind everybody, Beulah Heights, 12 to 3 p.m., panel discussion at Beulah Heights. Tahiba is going to be there speaking, and your son is going to speak too.
Yes, right? I'm moderating it. I'm not going to speak.
Oh, you're going to moderate it. Okay, yes, all right.
Beulah Heights and myself, we're organizing this. I bought this. This is something that God birthed into me.
Yes.
Inside of me, and this is my second panel discussion, and I'm collaborating with Beulah
Heights. Beulah Heights, wonderful. Yes. That's great. So, young lady is locked up, came home today. What do you say to her? Because there's probably quite a few right now out there that are listening. What do you say to her?
Welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing you say. And it says, what are your plans and how may I help you achieve them? Because once you have someone that can relate to you and that's willing to help you and that's not looking for anything from you, you have a better chance of having a connection with them. And I let them know I've been there and I tell them my story, full disclosure, because I'm not going to trust you if you've never been where I've gone. So what I say to you is welcome home. I'm here for you, and if there's anything that I can do for you, let me know. You have a whole group of women and men as a support system that you can and you should tap into, and let me be that resource for you.
So you give them a hand up.
A hand up, never a hand out.
There you go. Thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I think that, you know, it's a lot of folks that have been inspired today and also been educated. I think that that's extremely important. That's what this show is all about. Again, thank you again. And we'll see you on February 11th,
yes.
Beulah Heights from 1203's panel discussion, right? Yes.
Thank you.
Juan Castillo with his electric drum. Thank you so much for listening. I know you've been inspired today, and I'm quite sure you've been educated also. We will see you next week right here on the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC.
Pace Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.